I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The New Hampshire House is set to vote tomorrow on an education bill that, depending on your view, will either enhance student choice and academic performance or erode the quality of public education. The measure would create what are called scholarship tax credits. The money would not come directly from state coffers. Instead, businesses would donate to a designated scholarship fund and would get, in return, a tax credit worth most of that donation. Students would then apply for grants to help defray the cost of attending the private school of their choice. It's an idea that's caught on in more than half a dozen other states, partly because it aims to avoid the problem of sending public money to private schools. But opponents don't buy that argument, and they say there are plenty of other problems with this as well. For one, reducing business taxes could deprive the state budget of tens of millions of dollars, and individual public schools could take a hit as well, with critics claiming the loss of each student could mean the loss of several thousand dollars in state grants. Today in The Exchange, scholarship tax credits and whether they make the grade for the Granite State. Let's hear from you. What do you think of this idea of funding scholarships through business tax credits? Would you take the grant money for your child if it were offered? Or do you think this is the wrong focus for lawmakers right now, that there might be better ways to improve education in our state? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or join us on Facebook. Our guests are State Representative Mary Stuart Guile. She's a Democratic state rep from Concord and minority policy leader on the House Education Committee. And Representative Guile, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Representative Gregory Hill, a Republican state rep from Northfield and co-sponsor of the House and Senate versions of this bill that I just mentioned. And Representative Hill, good to see you too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
And I want to spend just a couple minutes with you, Representative Hill, outlining how this would work. It's kind of a new concept for us here in New Hampshire. So first of all, why do this through a business tax credit? Why not just do a regular old voucher?
Well, actually, that was the bill that we worked on initially when it came to the Education Committee, was a voucher bill. And we had testimony during that hearing that said that vouchers may have a problem in this state. We have something called the Blaine Amendment, which a number of other states have had and have had some limited success overcoming. But when we heard testimony on tax credits, the light bulbs went off, and we decided to pick up the mantle and run with it.
So eight other states have tried this, as I understand, and we may get into that a little bit later. One concern, Representative Hill, is how much reducing business taxes due to this credit. This would be off of the business profits tax or the business enterprise tax. So if businesses are getting tax credits for donating to scholarships, how much would this reduce revenues going into the state budget?
Actually, there's some controversy over that. When we have had fiscal notes done on this bill, it appears that we're all in agreement that at least in the first year, it's revenue neutral. In fact, it may even save the state some money. There are a number of features to this bill that we can move. There are variables that we can move up or down that would allow us to maintain that revenue neutral stream. So we believe that this would have a very limited impact on the state revenue system.
How is it revenue neutral? I don't get that, because if I'm a business and I used to pay $100,000 and now I'm only paying, well, now I'm not paying that $100,000 to the state, I'm paying to this scholarship fund instead. Doesn't that mean a loss of $100,000 to the state?
Well, actually, I like to look at this bill as split up in two areas. One is the funding, and in quite frankly, when you break it up this way, it looks exactly like what we're currently doing in this state in a number of other programs. We have tax credits in this state. We offer, I think there's six or seven different tax credits to businesses who donate to programs that we feel are in the greater common good. those operate just like this would. We offer the businesses to donate to a, in this case, a scholarship organization, a 501c3 company, and we use those dollars for scholarships. To make up for the loss of the revenue for those dollars going to those scholarship organizations, we do exactly what currently happens when students stop attending a public school. And we have set limits in this bill for the amount of scholarships that have to go to students that were in the public school at some point. And that number is at 70%. Currently, when a student leaves the public school and goes to anything else, goes to another public school, goes to a private school, stays home and homeschools, the state stops paying contributions or state adequacy to that public school. That's exactly what's going to happen in this as well.
So you might lose that business money coming into your state coffers, but you're saying you would save that adequacy grant because you would no longer be sending that child to a public school.
Correct.
Okay.
And well, let me just stop you. We still allow in this bill that you would go to you are allowed to go to a public school as well as private or as well as homeschool. It may be an out-of-district public school, a different public school. But to the school that the student once attended, it would be the same. They would stop seeing the adequacy because the child is no longer there. The other public school would pick up the adequacy.
And one more question for you, and then I want to bring Representative Guile in. Who would be eligible for these scholarships? Is there any means testing going on?
There is, and that has moved around. I think currently it's at anyone would have to qualify by three times the poverty limit, or 300, isn't it? 300.
Yeah, so Representative Guile, what do you think? I mean, you've heard people say that, you know, not every child succeeds in a traditional model. We do hear stories of kids who struggle in their local public school, and then they find a new setting, and they really take off academically. I've heard these stories. I'm sure you have, too. So why not find some way to help these kids out?
Well, first of all, Laura, as an advocate for public education, I do feel New Hampshire has an excellent system of public education. There's always room for improvement, but I think our students do very, very well, generally speaking. I think that in terms of choice for parents, New Hampshire public education offers choices. For example, a parent who wants a particular teacher in a public school can, if he or she so wishes, go and negotiate a placement for their child in that teacher's class. Dependent on the space availability, a parent can ask to have their child transferred from one public school within a school district to another public school in the same district. There is a robust system of charter schools emerging in our state that would give the parent another choice. We have the Virtual Learning Academy, which is growing and offers parents who have children who want to engage in learning online an opportunity to do that. And then, of course, we also give parents the choice of homeschooling. So I really feel that our system of public education already offers many opportunities to parents to find the best educational experience for their children. And I am opposed to vouchers generally because they detract from the public coffers that would, in fact, support public education.
Well, and quickly to you, Representative Hill, and then I want to take some calls. Critics have said, like Representative Guile, that this approach is a solution in search of a problem, that New Hampshire's public schools are doing pretty well compared to other states. I've got an email here from Ellen in Portsmouth who says, we know New Hampshire schools are considered among the top nationally, according to Annie E. Casey's Kids Count report. Vouchers are primarily used where schools are not successful, so why vouchers in New Hampshire, Ellen says, seems counterintuitive. Ellen, thanks for the email. Go ahead, Representative Hill.
Sure. I find very little to quarrel over. We do have excellent public schools in this state. When looked at in total, we have a variety of we have some lower performing public schools. We also have some higher performing public schools. this is not for all students. We have said that repeatedly right from the get-go. This is for those students that aren't fitting in. It is a one-size-fits-all school system we have. For those students that this does not be the best fit, this is an opportunity for the parents to decide whether that is, in their minds, a failing school or not for their child, and this is a way for them to go somewhere else.
Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email again is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's take a call. This is Shell in Portsmouth. Hi, Shell. Go ahead.
Hey there. I think one of the most important things is education, is that we give every child an equal opportunity to succeed in the school setting. And my question about this program is the voucher amount only going to assist those that can afford to pay the balance of a private school tuition? So if you're a lower-income person, that this voucher or this credit or scholarship, it's all the same thing, I believe, would that pay for the entire tuition of the private school? Or is it just going to benefit those families that can afford to pay the larger balance, whether it be, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 out of pocket, to be able to do that? So is it benefiting only those people that can afford the extra cost? Or okay, how is this going to benefit the lower-income families?
Shell, thanks for the call. And as I understand, Representative Hill, the voucher amount is $2,500. So answer his question if you could. Certainly private school doesn't cost $2,500 a year.
Certainly. The idea, first of all, Shell, is these are not vouchers. Vouchers typically are underwritten and controlled, run by the government, by in most cases by the state. These are run by individual organizations, 501c3 nonprofit companies. They determine the amount of the scholarship. We have written in the bill that at the end of the day, when they've totaled up all of their scholarships given out for the year, that the average is going to be $2,500, but that doesn't mean that every student would get $2,500.
I see. So some students could get more and some could get less.
That's right.
Shell, thanks a lot for calling. And after a short break, we'll take more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the New Hampshire Dental Society, whose members work every day to improve oral health and access to dental care across New Hampshire. Information at nhds.org. And from Keene State College Continuing Education, offering courses for professional growth, personal enrichment, and career enhancement. Registration open for summer classes at 1-800-KSC-1909. More on the controversy over education tax credits in New Hampshire on the exchange on NHPR, and then a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, an international summit on nuclear security. New Hampshire weather today, mostly sunny, breezy, and cold with high temperatures 40 to 45 for most of the state, around 35 in the North Country. For tonight, clouding up, lows near 15 north of the White Mountains, ranging closer to 25 in southern New Hampshire. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the legislature is looking at scholarship tax credits. Proposals that the House and Senate would provide tax credits for businesses who contribute to scholarship funds. These are already in place in 8 states, but they've also encountered criticism here and in those states. We've been looking at all of this, and we invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Also, we're now on Facebook, so we hope you go to our page and join the conversation there. And Representative Guile, Representative Hill, I want to bring in another voice into our conversation. This is Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center, which has published a study looking at scholarship tax credits called Choosing to Learn. Charlie, thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Well, you've called this bill the most important bill the legislature will pass this year. I read that, Charlie. I thought, wow, how come?
At its core, this is about educational opportunity. So much of what we do or what we talk about in the public policy process is very financial, and we're talking about spreadsheets and moving this number and moving that number. But this is about allowing students who don't have educational opportunity greater educational opportunity. Rich people in New Hampshire have school choice, and poor people don't. In fact, if you look at the statistics at the upper income levels of New Hampshire, about 30% of kids go to private school. And that means they all have choice. Some of them have chosen the public school. At the lower income levels, only about 5% do. The goal of this bill, like any school choice bill, is to allow more students to have more opportunity.
You've described this proposal, Charlie, as fiscally prudent. But as we talked about earlier, some people worry this could cost the state many millions of dollars when businesses take advantage of those tax credits. So explain how you see this, Charlie, as fiscally prudent.
Well, if you think about it, the average scholarship amount is $2,500. Mm-hmm. The average state tax credit for that scholarship is actually a little bit less than that because it's an 85% credit, which means, let's just say for the sake of argument, about $2,100 as a credit. For every student that leaves the school system, our aid is done on a per-pupil basis, with weightings, obviously, but on a per-pupil basis. We'll save around a little more than $4,000 per student. So every student who leaves, in the 70% of them that are required to, at a minimum, be people who were previously in a public school, the state will save a few thousand dollars per student. Our estimate, we're actually releasing a study on this today, is that it'll save between $1.5 and $2.5 million per year to the state budget. And that those numbers go up and down a little bit depending on some of the assumptions you make about administration, some of the assumptions you make about which students, and tweaking with some of the caps that are in the bill.
So it'll save money, you're saying, because...
Yes, absolutely. It'll save the state money. And then at the local level, someone will say, well, at the local level, they just lose money, though.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you.
Right, well, they save... It is absolutely true that just like when students leave the system now, you receive fewer state dollars. There's no question about that. But you also have fewer students. You only receive fewer dollars if you have fewer students. And in every case, the number of dollars per student will go up because the amount of money you're losing is much smaller than the amount of money you're gaining. It's worth noting that the total cost of this program on an annual basis is less than 0.25% of the amount of money we spend on K-12 education in New Hampshire, less than 0.25%. So it's hardly a radical change.
You know, talking about the impact on local schools, on those individual schools, Charlie,
sure.
Governor Lynch addressed this recently in a speech before a business group. And he said, look, you know, if a school loses 10 students, it still has those fixed costs. You know, minus 10 students doesn't mean you fire the janitor. It doesn't mean you fire a teacher. Now, if you lose 50 students, that's another story, but you still got to heat the building. You still got to
sure.
pay, you know, for the school nurse and so forth, even if you've got 10 fewer kids. So can you address that this could be a serious hit for individual
schools?
Well,
there's studies that rank fixed costs all over the place. And, you know, we've done studies in the past based on what schools do when they lose students, how much of the costs are fixed, and we have the number in a few thousands. But it's true that in a typical school, let's just say that you lose one kid, you save very little money. It's also true that if you gain one kid, you don't have any additional costs, yet we give you an additional per-pupil aid. There's no real way to do state aid in New Hampshire that's not on a per-pupil basis. We don't look at the school management and weight every student. And so it's also true that, you know, you may have gotten aid in the past that you didn't have commensurate costs with. And it's true that when two students leave your system today, if you leave your school today and you lose the aid that accompanies them, that's the way that you may not necessarily lose costs. It's also true that it may be the two or three students who put you over the tipping point where you are going to have one fewer classroom in this or one fewer classroom in that. But as a function of doing aid on a per-pupil basis, there's really no other way to do aid without the state just managing everything.
You know, based on the study that Jason Bedrick did for you at the center, Charlie, what have other states found to make these scholarship tax credits work well, whether it's means testing, whether it's an accountability system? What sort of cautions do you have for state lawmakers as they try to craft this in a good way for the schools and for the children?
Well, I think, frankly, I think one of the things you want to do is allow the scholarship organization to function as best it can. I think it's important to have an average scholarship amount rather than a fixed scholarship amount, because you want the opportunity for the organization to say, you know, for this child we're gonna go above that average amount, and for this child we may go below that average amount. You know, as you know, private school tuition is not a fixed number. You know, nobody actually pays sticker price on private school tuition. Everybody gets grants and aid. I know of no private school where there aren't students, for example, who go for free. And that's just the way that works. So you need that scholarship amount to be an average, not a fixed amount, because every child is different. That's a very important thing. I think means testing is very useful because it allows you to target the aid where it's needed most. There are people in New Hampshire that, frankly, are doing fine. I don't think Craig Benson probably needs a scholarship program to help him send his kids where he wants to.
Well, Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Again, that's Charlie Arlinghouse, president of the Josiah Bartlett Center, which has published a study looking at scholarship tax credits called Choosing to Learn. Our number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. And to you, I think, Representative Guile, you know, Charlie Arlinghouse said all the fears that this is going to blow a hole in the budget, that it's going to hurt individual schools financially. He says not necessarily. What do you think?
Well, in the hearing, the initial hearing on House Bill 1607, we were fortunate to have a member of the school board present, and she represents Hillsborough Dering, and she analyzed what, in fact, it would mean to their particular school district. They have a high percentage, I believe 40% of their children are on free and reduced lunch, almost 16% have our children with special needs, they have 42 homeless children. So it's a district with challenges, and so she said it's a district where you might have as many as 2 children per grade in the K through 12 continuum look for these scholarships. That impact would be perhaps as much as $90,000. And on a school district like Hillsborough Dering, that would be a devastating impact because, as you were saying, the school district still has to provide teachers, still has to provide buildings that are safe and clean and instructional materials and so on. So I'm concerned that the fiscal impact on local school districts could be very, very, very challenging.
Representative Hill, Charlie Arlinghouse made the case, but I'd like to hear from you too, again, as a co-sponsor of this bill. How can you assure schools that this is not going to be a big financial hit for them?
Well, I think what's very important to do in these types of bills is to look to see what goes on where these bills already exist. This is not something that we're creating out of whole cloth. These are time-tested programs. What we did, the senator and I, when we drafted this, was to look at the best practices throughout the country from each of these programs. And so these issues have come up everywhere. They have developed responses at the local school district. And in fact, we're a little bit, you can say better off or worse off, depending on your point of view, because we fund so much of our school through local tax dollars. Those tax dollars stay there.
The loss of a state grant isn't as big a hit.
It's not as big a hit as in other states where they still are successful. So the idea that when a student leaves and the state funding stops, that's exactly what schools are facing now without this bill. Populations, demographics in the state show that student populations are dropping.
But would this make it worse? I guess that's the concern.
It's an adaptable system. So, quite frankly, whenever you hear that a school is getting X number of dollars less, you have to also ask, well, how many fewer students are they having in that same time period? It doesn't tell the whole story when you just say that there's a drop in dollars from the state. There's also, as any of our taxpayers in the audience would attest, school budgets are not dropping from the local viewpoint, at least in my district.
You know, Mary, what about the idea, and this is a broader concept away from the sort of number crunching, that when you have programs like this, it lights a fire under the public schools to say, okay, maybe we need to be a little more responsive. Maybe we need to be a little more adaptable. Maybe we need to be a little more flexible, that a little competition is good for everybody. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, I think that the schools are really doing the best they can. One of the things you have to realize about our public education, Laura, is that it is open to all children. Our public education accepts children with special educational needs, children who have serious medical needs, children who cannot speak English, who arrive here from other countries. Our doors are open to all of those children. The idea of a voucher as a possibility for some of those children may sound like a good idea, but private schools and religious schools all have admissions criteria.
So they're not going to take these kids.
They can be very selective in terms of the students that they accept. And I just feel that we should be dedicating all the resources that we have to enhance and enrich our public education system and add choices, as we are already doing, but there may be more out there.
Real quick, Representative Hill, and then I want to go back to our callers.
We absolutely, if you look across the country, you absolutely do see that that these schools do pick up students across the gamut.
Private schools, you mean?
Private schools. So this is nothing that is going to just skim the cream off the top.
Let's take another call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Scott's in Dover. Hi, Scott. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi there. I'm Scott. Dover, we do a lot of work in school accountability, both here in New Hampshire and nationally. And one of the things that I have real concerns with this bill, and it's unlike the representative was talking about time-tested and learning from other states, but if we're really learning from other states, we would require accountability systems be applied to any of these schools that receive public money. And I know the sort of the line is, well, the parents will vote with their feet or with their dollars, and if the school's not working, they'll move their child out of that school. The reality is the accountability systems that have been developed in many states allow the kind of transparency of data that parents actually would need to be able to make an informed decision. Otherwise, they're just going with hunches and things like that. So that's a real concern I have with this bill. We're giving public money and not requiring public accountability.
Thank you, Scott, for the call. Representative Hill.
First of all, Scott, thanks for your call. We are not giving public money, so I'll stop that right there. These are private donations from businesses to private 501c3 not-for-profit companies. These dollars never enter the government coffers. It's akin to you taking a donation when you contribute to the United Way and take a tax deduction at the end of the year. We don't, and this goes to the accountability as well. Schools, when they get these dollars, private schools, the parents do vote with your feet. I know you discounted the idea, but they do. These are the parents, understand, that are looking for something different for their children. This is not for all parents. This is for parents that have found that their child does not fit into the public school system, and they are looking for some other alternative. When they get there, they're not going to stop their responsibility at that point, and they will take a look at what goes on in their schools for their children. So I reject the idea.
Scott, thanks for the call. Representative Guy, you want to jump in there real quick?
Well, the question of accountability is a really good one. As the bill is laid out, the major administrative responsibility for all of this system is within our Department of Revenue Administration. In fact, all of the logistics from the get-go has been dedicated to the Department of Revenue Administration. This is a State Department that lost $2.5 million in the last budget and has just had to cut 14 of its auditors. And so setting up the accountability system to monitor this whole effort is going to place an incredible demand on the resources of our state agency. And I think the caller's question is a very thoughtful one, and I think something that really needs to be, if this ever becomes a reality, worked out very carefully.
Let's take another call, and thank you for that one, Scott. This is Lauren in Pembroke. Hi, Lauren. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make a comment on Scott. Scott called, and he had questions about accountability in the school system. And I do agree with that. I think that the way that we gauge how a school is accountable is it's standardized testing and whatnot. It doesn't really show the potential of all students and what they can do and what they're capable of. And I think that that's a problem, and I think that is why this bill passing would be great, because it gives these students that maybe don't test as well another opportunity to go somewhere where they can learn in an environment that's best suited for their needs.
Lauren, thanks a lot for calling. What do you think, Representative Guile?
Well, that was a really interesting call, and I think the caller has a good point that, you know, our public schools perhaps do need to look at ways of judging how well a student is doing using other than a standardized test. In fact, our public schools are. We have public schools that have portfolios, that have growth charts that follow a student's progress as they work their way through the through A grade and then through the grades. Alternatives in accountability and evaluation are constantly being reviewed and tested in our public schools. So, but her point is well taken.
Lauren, thanks for the call. What do you think, Representative Hill?
Well, I couldn't agree more. There are alternatives to standardized testing. I bear witness that that private schools are doing those now. I regularly sit down. My son attends a private school. I regularly sit down with the advisor and go through his portfolio, and so I do know what's going on with my son in private school. So there's nothing to say that that wouldn't occur when any of these students leave public school and go to a private school. Again, look at things that happen in real life now. We provide scholarships to a lot of the post-secondary kids. We're not looking for any kind of accountability for whether those dollars on a federal level are actually accountable, whether those students are actually getting any kind of true educational value when they go to post-secondary. So I
Although a lot of people now are saying maybe we should do that, but that's another show.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks a lot for the call, Lauren. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also join us with your comments on Facebook, and we'll be right back.
Today on Word of Mouth, a loophole you could drive a heifer through. Qualifying for agricultural tax breaks requires only a couple of cows or a handful of sheep. We'll hear about the celebrity ranchers and wealthy landowners milking it for millions. Plus, a Chinese firm advises Iran on how to spy on its own citizens. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth infiltrates new ideas. Tomorrow at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Restaurant Week Portsmouth and the Seacoast, a 10-day culinary experience featuring 49 restaurants today through Sunday. Details at restaurantweekportsmouth.com. And from Holloway Motorcars of Manchester, authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer featuring luxury automobiles that feature performance, safety, fuel efficiency, and iconic design. BenzCars.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at a debate at the State House surrounding proposals for what are called scholarship tax credits. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. What do you think of the idea of funding private school scholarships through business tax credits? Would you apply for a grant for your child if it were offered? Or do you think there are better ways to improve public education in our state? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Our guests are two state representatives who've been looking at this, Mary Stuart Guile, Democrat from Concord, and Gregory Hill, Republican from Northfield. And both of you, I want to bring another voice into our conversation now. This is Bill Duncan, member of a relatively new organization called Defending New Hampshire Public Education. And Bill, nice to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, you have been strongly opposed to these, very vocal about why you think a scholarship tax credit is a bad idea. Just very briefly, can you explain why you think this is so terrible?
Well, to me, it's a very odd bill. It's part of a national effort to privatize public schools, but it's not clear who in New Hampshire is asking for this. The most recent Granite State poll found that by a 2-to-1 margin, voters of all stripes reject spending public money to help children attend private schools.
This isn't public money, though. It would come from business tax credits. Or at least that's the argument. That's the argument.
Yeah, I know. And so if it weren't public money, then it would not be coming out of the school district budget, right? In other words, yes, you get 100% almost tax credit to offset a nominally private contribution. But right away, that is money coming out of the state budget. And the amount that will come out, Representative Hill has said that it's an adjustable system or adaptive, but the amount that will come out of the state budget is totally unpredictable. That's my word for it, because it's a function of how many scholarships go to public school and private school students over a period of time.
That is a lot of unknowns. We don't know where those dollars will be spent.
And it will be unknown to the legislature each year. So there'll be no telling how much money will come out of the state budget and how much will be coming back from the school districts to offset it from the school district budget.
Charlie Arlinghouse was on with us earlier, Bill. I'm sure you heard it. And he said that this could actually be a plus for the state budget, because even though you would lose that business tax money coming into state coffers because of the tax credit, you would gain money because you wouldn't be having to send out several thousand dollars in individual grants to public schools that normally accompany a child. So he said, and others have said, that this actually could be a financial benefit.
It's out of the question. If you do the numbers that the Department of Education provides and you run them out over time, there's no way for this not to lose a lot of money. The only question is how much it would lose. And the money that comes out of the the school districts, advocates say, is just like any other child leaving any time, but it isn't. Normally, if your child leaves the public school, the school will continue to get money for several years just because of the details of the way the adequacy funding works. But under a voucher program, this program, when the child leaves, the money comes out of the school's budget right away. So net-net, the school budget loses as much as $10,000 that they would not have lost if a child left normally.
Bill,
so
let me
it's
ask
a big
you one
hit.
More, yeah, let me ask you one more question, if I could, on this broader issue of school choice. You know, public schools work for a lot of kids, but they don't work for everyone. Here's an email that I got from Rosie. She says she grew up in Massachusetts. There, during the middle of my illustrious high school career, I was struggling at a large high school, getting into trouble, flunking classes, not doing my best. I chose to go to a choice school a little farther from my home. It was much smaller. I graduated with 36 students. And when I left my original public school, my school money came with me. Rosie says every public school is not for everyone. The district I moved to was much poorer overall, but because of the small size of the school, I could no longer fall through the cracks. She was able to build relationships with school staff. Much better fit, Rosie says. And she says, Bill, I think if kids or parents want to move to districts or go to a different school, private or otherwise, it should be accepted. This is the concept that we keep coming back to, Bill, and I know it's a familiar one for you. The idea that, you know, look, there are just some kids that are not doing well in that standard public school setting, and they need choices.
Well, this is a very subtle concept for the legislature to take on. Representative Guile made the point, I think, very well, that there is a wide variety of choice available within the public school system. So, yeah, there are good stories about my child in this public school and your child in that public school. There are lots of good stories on both sides. But the idea of marshaling these many millions of dollars and unknown expenses to add to the choice for kids who could go to public schools anyway. The demographic of kids who now go to private schools, leaving public schools and going to private schools, is the same as the demographic started targeted by the program.
Well, Bill, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Sure.
That's Bill Duncan, member of a relatively new organization called Defending New Hampshire Public Education. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Very quickly, Representative Guile, I want to throw this to you. You said, and Bill Duncan said, that there is a fair amount of choice within New Hampshire's current public education system. I got to say, I think there are some parents who feel that is not the case. They feel they don't have any power to request a particular teacher. It can be tough to request a transfer to another school. The state only has a dozen or so charter schools. They're not widely available. So I think a lot of parents would challenge the notion that there is choice embedded in the current system.
Well, it takes a fairly assertive parent to do that. And there are organizations, both within the educational community as well as in the social service community, who are working with parents who might be reticent about approaching public schools, perhaps due to their own public school experience. And there more of them are coming to the public school and getting involved in various activities. The reality check, I was thinking of the caller, the email that you read.
Rosie, who switched to a small school and did very well.
But the reality check with the New Hampshire plan and the average tuition rate of $2,500 per student, recognizing that it can go either way, Laura, very honestly, that would not pay to send a preschooler to preschool for three mornings a week. So we really need to caution all of our parents as they look at this particular system that $2,500 may seem like a lot. It's possible they could approach a private school and get that money enhanced. But our private school, our non-secular and secular private school rates range from $4,000 up to $30,000 a year.
What gets to what that caller said earlier is, $2,500 really isn't that much. So he said, won't this just help people who are already better off,
right,
who can afford to fill in that gap there? You look like you want to jump in, Representative Hill, and then back to our callers.
I'm dying to jump back in. The idea here is this is one of the few bills that we work on that parents will decide if this is a good bill or not. If parents are happy where they are, they won't take advantage of this, and everything goes away. The money comes back to from the credits back into BPT or BET taxes. The other part is private schools currently, as Charlie Arlinghouse mentioned, private schools are in the habit of contributing to that sticker price that he mentioned. So the fact of the dollar amount, we're actually pretty good nationally in all the other programs. Pennsylvania, for instance, gives out $1,000 credits, scholarships, and they have 38,000 doing this.
Wow.
We're looking at about 1,400 kids. That's the target here with the amount of money that's set up for this program. As Charlie pointed out, it's 0.1% of the total dollars we spend on education. The 1,400 students, you have to relate that to the 196,000 students that we have in our system. So it's a very small program.
Let's take another call. This is Kim in East Kingston. Hi, Kim. Thanks for waiting. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
My question directs the conversation to this. Aren't religious schools the main beneficiaries of the voucher program? And let me say that DOE statistics show that most of the kids who get these vouchers would go to private schools anyway without vouchers. In fact, kids that are already choosing to go to private schools would benefit from this program. The main beneficiaries will be religious schools who do not have the capacity and who will need to raise less scholarship money from other sources. Why is this a legitimate purpose for state-run scholarship money or voucher money ultimately paid for by reductions in the state aid to school district? And I just want to say one thing. Representative Hill just said himself that if the money isn't used on a yearly basis, it goes back to the general fund. How can you not call it public money if, in fact, it reverts back to the public fund?
Okay,
it
Kim, lots of points.
Money.
Lots of points. And why don't you take that last point, Representative Hill? We keep going back and forth on this. Is this public money or isn't it?
It absolutely is not. In fact, there was a Supreme Court decision just last May, I believe, that there was a lawsuit out of Arizona that that determined that the dollars that the folks taking up the challenge, the lawsuit, had no standing, meaning that the dollars were not government dollars that went into tax credits.
But if they're not used, they go back to the Treasury. So then it sounds like they are public dollars. So I'm
no, actually. Perhaps I misspoke or perhaps it was misinterpreted. The idea is that these scholarships, as I mentioned earlier, parents will decide whether this is a good program or not. If parents decide that they don't want to apply for the scholarships, those scholarships are sitting in the 501c3 companies.
This fund,
something right. has to happen with those dollars. So what happens is at the end of the year, the scholarship organization would send a letter back to the business saying, we did not have scholarships or people apply for the scholarships, therefore you can't take the credit.
So now you have to pay it to the state.
You would have to be paying your taxes the old way.
Real quick, Representative Guile, and then
I'm
going to take another
call.
Well,
just the caller's point is a valid one. In fact, businesses and the scholarship organizations are being used as intermediaries to handle money that would otherwise be considered tax revenue and would be in the general fund to support public education.
Although these have stood the constitutional test, according to Josiah Bartlett Center, in the 8 states that they're operating in. So other states have looked at this and found, yeah, this is legitimate.
Our Constitution might say otherwise. I think there would be a challenge.
Let's take one more if we could. This is Jim in Stratford. And Jim, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Yeah, hey, this is actually Senator Forsyth, the prime sponsor of the Senate bill. Sorry I couldn't be on earlier. I was teaching class, actually.
Go ahead, Senator Forsyth. So, thanks for calling us.
Sure. No, just heard the last part of the discussion. I just want to say I'm a bit disappointed in the opponents. I know Bill Duncan, I have pointed out the errors in his fiscal analysis. He shows 10 years from now that there'd be something like 25,000-30,000 students in the program, which means we'd have 5,000 to 10,000 more private school students, yet somehow we're not saving any money, which absolutely makes no sense. Those students had to have come out of the public system. So he's using false numbers. I've told him repeatedly, and I'm disappointed he continues to do that. The bottom line is, you know, a scholarship for $2,500 compared to an average tuition of $15,000 in the public school, there's no way this can't save money. And actually, if you look at the analysis, it's really the school districts that stand to save the big dollars compared to the state long term, because they pay the higher burden of education. $4,100 at the state level, school districts pay the remaining around $11,000. And you know, numerous studies have shown that the variable cost for education is like 70% to 85%. So, you know, it's really the school districts that stand to save a lot of money in this program.
Well, and Representative Forsyth, I don't know if you heard, but Charlie Arlinghouse was on earlier from Josiah Bartlett. They've done a study on this, and he was making those points. But I do wonder if you can address the concern raised by our earlier caller that, you know, this is going to help kids who already are going to private school. The parents can say, hey, great, we can get a little tax break here.
Well, again, you know, it's always disappointing to see people misportray the bill. In fact, we require 70% of students have to come out of the public school system. So these are not students that were going to public school.
Currently enrolled.
These would not be
students who are currently enrolled. So you're not helping people who are already doing this on their own.
Yeah, only 30% could go to currently enrolled. And realistically, that 30%, because we do means testing, that 30% most likely is going to go towards incoming first graders. That may or may not have gone to public school to begin with. We'll never know that. That's a savings that we're going to get that we'll really never know the savings there.
All right. Well, Senator Forsyth, thank you for calling in. In the interest of time, I got to let you go.
Thank you.
And both of you, Representative Guile and Representative Hill, predictions time. The House, Representative Hill, is going to vote on this bill tomorrow. What do you think?
Oh, I think it'll pass.
And by a wide enough margin to avoid a veto, because Governor Lynch has some real concerns.
I know we are working on it from the Senate side, and I think we can overcome the veto in the Senate side. Time will tell. Preliminary numbers that I've seen look like we would have a very good chance of overcoming a veto in the House.
What do you think, Representative Guile?
I hope I don't share Representative Hill's optimism.
I'm not surprised.
First of all, the Senate bill, as you know, was voted interim study, which in an election year means that it's pretty well gone. If, in fact, the Senate votes for interim study this Wednesday, it was voted by the Senate Finance Committee. I think the House will probably pass this bill, but I think it will be veto. I think the vote will be veto-proof. I really do feel that people recognize that this is part of a national effort, a national initiative to really attack our public schools. And I don't think that is the general consensus of the House or of the New Hampshire people.
Sounds like you got your work cut out for you, Representative Hill.
We're up to the task.
All right. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Representative Gregory Hill, Republican state rep from Northfield, co-sponsored the bill we talked about, the House and Senate versions of that bill. Mary Stuart Guile, thank you also for being here.
Thank you, Laura. Great to be here.
Representative Mary Stuart Guile, Democratic representative from Concord and minority policy leader on the House Education Committee. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Ryan Lassard. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.